Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, April 10, 2019. The sit-in by hundreds of thousands of protesters in Sudan continues in Khartoum.
He says that they support army troops and protesters' rights. They will not step back until we establish a great country. At least 22 people have been killed in clashes with security forces, according to activists.
And the spiritual retreat for South Sudanese leaders gets underway at Vatican,
with the goal of offering on the part of the Church a propitious occasion for reflection and prayer, as well as an occasion for encounter and reconciliation in a spirit of respect and trust to those who in this moment have the mission and the responsibility to work for a future of peace and prosperity for the South Sudanese people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese civil and church leaders are scheduled to take part in a two-day spiritual retreat at the Vatican that will include the attendance of people of Pope Francis and members of other churches. They will hold a prayer service for the country just weeks before they start implementing a peace deal to end 5 years of civil war. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA from Rome.
The spiritual retreat was proposed to Pope Francis by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who will be attending. The Pope agreed to hold the retreat in the Santa Marta residence inside Vatican walls. The highest civil and church authorities of South Sudan are expected to take part. They will include members of the Presidency of the Republic of Sudan, including President Salva Kiir, and four of the five vice presidents who are assuming positions of great national responsibility on May 12. Eight members of the South Sudan Council of Church will also be attending. Vatican spokesman Alessandro Gisotti explained the idea behind the gathering.
This event, both ecumenical and diplomatic at the same time, was organized by mutual agreement between the Secretariat of State and the Office of the Archbishop of Canterbury, with the goal of offering on the part of the Church a propitious occasion for reflection and prayer, as well as an occasion for encounter and reconciliation in a spirit of respect and trust to those who in this moment have the mission and the responsibility to work for a future of peace and prosperity for the South Sudanese people.
During the retreat, there will be preaching by a Ugandan bishop and the president of major superiors of Africa and Madagascar. On the final day, Pope Francis will pronounce a closing speech. Participants will be given a Bible signed by the Pope, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the former moderator of the Presbyterian Church of Scotland, with a message, "Seek that which unites, overcome that which divides." Pope Francis has often voiced concern about the situation in South Sudan. He granted President Kiir an audience last March and then said he hoped to travel to the country to encourage the peace process. The Pope's hope was to visit along with Archbishop Welby, but given the still existing tensions on the ground, no dates for such a visit have yet been announced. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Tens of thousands of protesters have been gathered around Sudan's army headquarters since Saturday, demanding that President Omar al-Bashir be removed from power. At least 22 people have been killed in clashes with security forces, according to activists. Naba Mohyeddin has more from Khartoum.
Ahmed Atayib is a former lieutenant colonel in Sudan's army who resigned when President Omar al-Bashir came to power in 1989. 30 years later, he came to sit outside army headquarters with many retired ex-officers, chanting anti-Bashir slogans and voicing support for army troops who have defended protesters. He said that they support army troops and protesters' rights. They will not step back until we establish a great country. At least 22 people have been killed in clashes with security forces, according to activists. That include 5 soldiers killed after troops clashed with police trying to disperse the protesters. The head of the army's rapid support forces said in a televised speech Tuesday, the army will not break a peaceful protest. He said that his troops will never interfere in non-violent, constitutionally authorized protests since the first day. This is the army, First Lieutenant Ahmed Siddiq speaking to protesters on Tuesday, in the middle of chants and cheers. Siddiq said he's urging honorable soldiers in all army forces to stand by protesters. The demonstrations began in December to protest a steep hike in bread prices, but quickly changed into general protest against Bashir. The spokesman of Bashir's government, Hassan Ismail, told VOA that the only solution to Sudan's political crisis is dialogue. He said that ongoing sit-in was arranged by opposition group, which resist the dialogue. The Sudan sit-in has entered a new level. It's gone on for 5 nights, despite of the deadly first night. Observers say a military coup against Bashir is possible, but the international community is hoping that Bashir can be persuaded to step aside. On Tuesday, the United States, Britain, and Norway demanded Sudanese authorities deliver a credible plan for political transition. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba, where a former youth leader in South Sudan is threatening to take the government to court over his dismissal. South Sudan's National Minister of Youth, Culture and Sports says she will not revoke her decision to dissolve the South Sudan National Youth Union. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Nadia Robdudi says several youth groups have written a petition asking her office to remove Albina Bow as leader of South Sudan National Union. Bow says he will not hand over his position to any youth leader unless a convention is held and will not obey the ministerial order firing him from the union. Bow claims the youth ministry is supposed to provide logistical support, plan activities and draft policies for the union, but not intervene in its leadership.
The only body that can impeach or can dissolve the union is the leadership of the council, membership of the council, I mean, and the body that can impeach the president of youth is 50 plus one from the General Assembly who have elected him. So the minister is acting out of the constitution of the youth, and therefore this kind of ministerial order is not recognized by the leadership of the youth.
Bow says he is not interested in being a stand-in until someone else takes over running the youth union. He says all he wants is to officially hand over power to the next elected leader, who must compete fair and square for the job. Bow says he will sue the ministry over his removal from office. Nadia Robdudi, the Minister for Youth, Culture and Sports, says the South Sudan Youth and Sports Act of 2003 permits her to either extend the president's term of office or resolve to form a steering committee to conduct elections for a new leader of the youth union.
I refer to dissolve the office because Albino has already a problem with the young people. They have a petition which the law says that if they fail to convince the General Assembly, and also he has been they wanted to impeach him. To reduce the tension among the young people, it is better to remove the office which is comprised of 5 or 7 people rather than the millions of people died and then they wanted to fight.
Dudi says the ministry acted best on the petition of various youth leaders calling on Bow to leave because his term of office has ended. She says she has also learned of fighting between supporters of Albina Bow and supporters of the ministry. Minister Dudi challenged Bow on his stated intent to carry out legal proceedings against the ministry.
There is a law. I didn't bring these laws in my house. This is the laws of the country. Let him go and go to the Minister of Justice to ask the Minister of Justice. This is a custodian of the laws in the country. If he has been told that this is not the right decision, well, I will respect also the Minister of Justice to confirm that this is not the right the right laws because they are the one who provide this one.
Dudi says her decision can only be revoked by the Council of Ministers and has formed a steering committee to prepare a national youth convention. She says the committee is already raising funds to hold elections. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still in South Sudan, the United Nations Central Emergency Response Fund has allocated $11 million to help 270,000 men, women, and children displaced by the conflict within South Sudan to return to their homes. The head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan says the money will be used to provide returnees with food, farming tools and seeds, and shelter. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency says more than 23,000 South Sudanese have spontaneously and voluntarily returned to their villages from refugee camps in neighboring countries since the signing of the revitalized peace agreement. Steve O'Malley, head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA in South Sudan, says the money will be used to provide basic services and relief items to tens of thousands of returnees.
So what we want to do is be able to expand health and education services and water and sanitation for people in that area, and as well as food assistance. We want to make sure that people who are returning home are given some small supplies, buckets, blankets, those kinds of things to help them get home, as well as seeds and tools so that they can plant before the rainy season really gets started.
O'Malley says UN OCHA is working with other aid agencies and the government to assess 10 areas where IDPs are voluntarily returning home. He says aid agencies will assist the returnees and people living in the communities where IDPs are returning.
So there are four areas in Jonglei: Ayod, Aror, Akobo, and Fangak. There are two counties in Unity, that's Koch and Lier. Two in western Bahr el Ghazal, that's Raja and Wau. And then two in western Equatoria, that's Tambora and Yambio. So this is what we have for right now using these funds. And of course, we'll have to find ways to raise money for those other areas.
O'Malley says it has been difficult for aid agencies to determine the number of IDPs returning to their home villages from all six UN Protection of Civilian Sites across the country.
Because sometimes the POC, the residents of the POCs, they leave without necessarily announcing that they're leaving. They might go home for a month to see whether or not it's safe to go home and safe to stay home and whether or not they can support themselves. Right now, we still have a lot of movements going on, and so you can't easily say this many people for sure have left. Now, we do see declines overall in the numbers of people in the POC sites. Last UNMISS report showed, for example, a reduction of 10,000 people in Benju, POC site. But it's tricky to measure because you don't necessarily have people checking in and out.
O'Malley says about 181,000 people still live in UN-run protection of civilian sites, adding that it's hard to say how many will return to their homes by the end of the year. John Makuch, an IDP residing in a UN-run protection of civilian site in Juba, says he wants to return to his village in former Unity State because services at the IDP camp are insufficient.
I'm not able to get anything because the food that I was getting from POC is not there nowadays. The water, the protection, the other services that you humanitarian office or humanitarian aid is used to give us are not there nowadays. So the little thing that they are now deliver, they are giving money. 1,000 per each person. So with the situation of South Sudan and inflation of the commodities in the market, so you may consume it in one day and the other day you are idling.
UN OCHA says approximately 1.9 million South Sudanese have fled their homes due to violence and conflict and live in settlements or various communities across the country. Many of them have been displaced more than once since the conflict broke out in late 2013. 2.3 million other South Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries, including Uganda, Kenya, and Sudan. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at hostages rescued by the Cameroonian military. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think it's important for girls to finish their education before getting married?
Yeah, actually, education is the strongest tool to everyone, not only even women. So it is an added advantage if a woman is educated and then thinks about getting married.
Very important. First of all, girls, women are vulnerable. And before they complete education, it becomes a challenge either to develop holistically, but once they are done with education, they can actually develop.
I think it's very important for girls to finish education before getting married, because these days it's necessary for girls to be educated. Like, for example, if girls are educated, it's very hard for them to be harassed by gays.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Cameroonian army has rescued five people who were abducted and held for months inside the Central African Republic. The hostages found Tuesday abandoned in the wild say they were treated like slaves by suspected Central African Republic rebels because their families could not afford to pay a ransom. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Ngaoundera, Cameroon.
Medical staff at the Ngaoundere Hospital attend to five Cameroonians freed from captivity Tuesday. Cameroon's military found them in the wild near the border with the Central African Republic. Hospital director Mohamedou Hassini says one of the freed hostages, a 17-year-old boy, has a severe fever and blood loss, but the rest are in good health.
Il s'agit donc d'une jeune fillette de 13 ans et sa maman qui a environ 30 ans.
He says a 13-year-old girl, her 30-year-old mother, the oldest man who is 54 years old, and the youngest boy who is 17 are physically stable, but they will be kept in the hospital for medical examinations and psychological tests. Another freed hostage, a 23-year-old woman, also appears to be in good health. 13-year-old Aissatou Kingé says the hostages spent a very difficult 5 months with their captors in the bush near Yukutunda, a village bordering the Central African Republic. She says her feet and the feet of all the women were tied with chains every evening before they went to sleep on a bare floor. All the men were in chains throughout their captivity, says Kingé, and were severely beaten at any moment. Kingé says their captors, whose identity was not clear, threatened to kill them if a $30,000 ransom was not paid. 54-year-old freed hostage Abo Yunusa says they were forced to work during their captivity.
Ils sont venus, ils m'ont pris, ils m'ont conduit jusqu'à Boboche. C'est là-bas qu'ils m'ont laissé.
He says they were required to slaughter and clean stolen goats and cows for about 30 heavily armed men and 17 other hostages. One day when a group of 13 hostages was to be freed, Yunusa thought he would also be released because they asked him what he will tell his people when he returns home. But he says the captors decided to keep him because they said He looked like someone who would reveal their location to the military to kill them. The governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon, Kildare Tageke Buka, visited the freed hostages in the hospital. He says their captors abandoned them in the bushes as Cameroon's military was closing in.
Les ravisseurs ont décidé de les relaxer parce qu'ils étaient aussi sous pression.
He says the ceaseless tracking, systematic and persistent pressure exerted by the soldiers was such that the kidnappers had no other option than to free the hostages. Buka adds he has ordered the military to arrest the kidnappers and free those still in captivity. Buka would not say if the captors were believed to be Central African Republic rebels, but CAR militias have often entered Cameroon to seize cattle ranchers and traders to extort ransom or steal their property. Cameroon hopes cross-border abductions will stop following an African Union-sponsored peace deal in February between the government of CAR and armed groups. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Ngaoundéré, Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to Mozambique, where international relief organizations have converged on the city of Beira, Mozambique, to provide emergency help to people affected by Cyclone Idai, which devastated parts of Southeast Africa in March. The storm killed more than 800 people, wiped out roads and bridges, damaged more than 100,000 homes, and destroyed nearly a million acres of crops, according to UN. VOA's Brian Padden traveled to Mozambique with a disaster response team and says the logistical challenges in mounting relief operations is immense.
As Cyclone Idai pounded Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe in late March, causing massive wind damage and extensive flooding, the American-based relief organization Samaritan's Purse started to put a disaster relief plan in motion.
So the biggest challenges are usually with logistics and communications. So logistics would be getting all of our supplies from where we've pre-positioned them in around the world and getting them here as soon as possible.
Samaritan's Purse is one of many relief organizations that have set up field operations in the Mozambican city of Beira to help the impoverished region recover from the devastating natural disaster. Using its own DC-8 cargo aircraft, Samaritan's Purse brought in people and supplies that included thousands of tarps to provide temporary shelters after the cyclone tore corrugated metal roofs off homes. At the Beira Airport, World Food Program helicopters are providing relief groups transport to outlying areas where washed-out roads prevent access by land. Samaritan's Purse was delayed in sending 16 metric tons of equipment and medicine to build a mobile hospital unit in the isolated town of Buzi, as other groups sending food took priority.
Things change on a minute-by-minute basis. Today actually was better because we weren't competing with a lot of aircraft yesterday. This tarmac was full of large aircraft that were competing for lift resources.
Disaster response teams constantly cope with adversity and unforeseen delays. A water sanitation crew had been slowed by a malfunctioning water pump needed to clean hundreds of wells in poor neighborhoods contaminated by floodwaters. The engineers were eventually able to rig locally purchased clamps to make the pump work again.
You've got to kind of piece parts together to try to get, you know, whatever fits. And oftentimes we'll make up that difference by just wrapping things in tape and just getting it to work. So there's a lot of field fitting that goes on.
These emergency response teams in Mozambique are expected to wrap up their efforts in the next few weeks and return home until the next international disaster strikes. Brian Patton, VOA News, Beira.
Okay, to upload those boxes, you're talking.
Still in Mozambique, life is still far from normal in the port city of Beira following last month's devastating cyclone. Most businesses remain closed and the city's residents are hungry as they struggle to rebuild their lives. Mohammed Yusuf has this report from Beira.
39-year-old Maria Mushan's home was destroyed by the storm that hit central Mozambique, but she is slowly rebuilding her life. She says she fixed her house using old iron sheets so she could have a roof and a place to hide. But, she says, when it rains, water comes in. Mushan survived the strong winds, but the electric pole and wires that nearly killed her when they collapsed have yet to be fixed. Many such wires are scattered across Beira, a sign the city administration is overwhelmed by Cyclone Idai that swept through Mozambique, Zimbabwe and Malawi. The storm hit Mozambique in March, killing more than 800 people and leaving hundreds of thousands homeless or displaced. Some people are starting to rebuild their lives, but for those who cannot afford to, end up in accommodation centers. Victoria Joan says she has nowhere to go out of the accommodation center because the storm destroyed the house a church gave her. More than 150,000 displaced persons from three neighboring districts around Beira are being sheltered in the port city. Some, like Maria Joao, who fled the town of Buzi, is afraid of returning to her home because the flood that killed their neighbors. She says she doesn't have a plan to go back unless maybe she gets a home on higher ground water cannot reach. She says the water was too much and the floods could come back again next year. While some businesses have reopened, many remain closed. Goods stored in storm-damaged warehouses have to be moved to safer places. Despite the challenges, Beira City Mayor Davis Simango says everyone has a role to play in rebuilding the ravaged city.
We are going to rebuild the city. Your hands will also help to rebuild the city. So I think that it will be useful for us. The most important that as more people you have in the city, more pressure you have in the infrastructures. I'm talking about public infrastructures. So now we need to rebuild quickly the public infrastructure so we can support that pressure which we're having now.
But in nearly a month since Cyclone Idai destroyed their world, survivors see no end in sight to the many problems caused by the massive storm. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Beira, Mozambique.
That report by Mohamed Yusuf in Mozambique brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday, when I'll leave you with the song Yangada Gadia by MJ Yore, who sings in his native Zande language.
Voila.
We've been listening to MJ Yore with the song Yangada Gadia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.